Chapter 3. When I woke, Prometheus was gone. The golden blood had been wiped from the floor. The hole the manacles had made was closed over. I heard the news from a naiad cousin. He had been taken to a great jagged peak in the Caucasus and chained to a rock. An eagle was commanded to come every noon and tear out his liver and eat it steaming from his flesh. Unspeakable punishment, she said, relishing each detail, the bloody beak, the shredded organ regrowing, only to be ripped forth again. Can you imagine? I closed my eyes. I should have brought him a spear, I thought. Something so he could have fought his way through. But that was foolish. He did not want a weapon. He had given himself up. Talk of Prometheus's punishment scarcely lasted out the moon. A dryad stabbed one of the graces with her hairpin. My uncle Boreas and Olympian Apollo had fallen in love with the same mortal youth. I waited till my uncles paused in their gossip. Is there any news of Prometheus? They frowned as if I had offered them a plate of something foul. What news could there be? My palm ached where the blade had cut, though of course there was no mark. Father, I said, will Zeus ever let Prometheus go? My father squinted at his drafts. He would have to get something better for it, he said. Like what? My father did not answer. Someone's daughter was changed into a bird. Boreas and Apollo quarreled over the youth they loved, and he died. Boreas smiled slyly from his feasting couch. His gusty voice made the torches flicker. You think I'd let Apollo have him? He does not deserve such a flower. I blew a discus into the boy's head. That showed the Olympian prig. The sound of my uncle's laughter was a chaos, the squeaks of dolphins, seal barks, water-slapping rocks. A group of nereids passed, eel-belly white, on their way home to their salt halls. Perseus flicked an almond at my face. What's wrong with you these days? Maybe she's in love, Pasiphae said. Ha, Perseus laughed. Father cannot even give her away. Believe me, he's tried. My mother looked back over her delicate shoulder. At least we don't have to listen to her voice. I can make her talk. Watch. Perseus took the flesh of my arm between his fingers and squeezed. You've been feasting too much, my sister laughed at him. He flushed. She's just a freak. She's hiding something. He caught me by the wrist. What are you always carrying around in your hand? She's got something. Open her fingers. Pasiphae peeled them back one by one, her long nails pricking. They peered down, my sister spat. Nothing. My mother whelped again, a boy. My father blessed him but spoke no prophecy, so my mother looked around for somewhere to leave him. My aunts were wise by then and kept their hands behind their backs. I will take him, I said. My mother scoffed, but she was eager to show off her new string of amber beads. Fine, at least you will be of some use. You can squawk at each other. Aetes, my father had named him, Eagle. His skin was warm in my arms as a sun-hot stone and soft as petal velvet. There had never been a sweeter child. He smelled like honey and just kindled flames. He ate from my fingers and did not flinch at my frail voice. He only wanted to sleep curled against my neck while I told him stories. Every moment he was with me, I felt a rushing in my throat, which was my love for him. So great, sometimes I could not speak. He seemed to love me back. That was the greater wonder. Circe was the first word he ever spoke, and the second was sister. My mother might have been jealous if she had noticed. Perseus and Pasiphae eyed us to see if we would start a war. A war? We did not care for that. Aetes got permission from father to leave the halls and found us a deserted seaside. The beach was small and pale and the trees barely scrub, but to me it seemed a great, lush wilderness. In a wink, he was grown and taller than I was. But still, we would walk arm in arm. Pasiphae jeered that we looked like lovers. Would we be those type of gods who coupled with their siblings? I said if she thought of it, she must have done it first. It was a clumsy insult, but Aetes laughed, which made me feel quick as Athena, flashing god of wit. Later, people would say that Aetes was strange because of me. I cannot prove it was not so. But in my memory, he was strange already, different from any other god I knew. Even as a child, he seemed to understand what others did not. He could name the monsters who lived in the sea's darkest trenches. He knew that the herbs Zeus had poured down Kronos' throat were called pharmaca. They could work wonders upon the world, and many grew from the fallen blood of gods. I would shake my head. How do you hear such things? I listen. I had listened too, but I was not my father's favored heir. Aetes was summoned to sit in on all his councils. My uncles had begun inviting him to their halls. I waited in my room for him to come back so we could go together to that deserted shore and sit on the rocks, the sea spray at our feet. I would lean my cheek upon his shoulder and he would ask me questions that I had never thought of and could barely understand. Like, how does your divinity feel? What do you mean? I said. Here, he said, let me tell you how mine feels. Like a column of water that pours ceaselessly over itself and is clear down to its rocks. Now you. I tried answers, like breezes on a crag, like a gull screaming from its nest. He shook his head. No, you are only saying those things because of what I said. What does it really feel like? Close your eyes and think. I closed my eyes. If I had been a mortal, I would have heard the beating of my heart. But gods have sluggish veins, and the truth is, what I heard was nothing. Yet I hated to disappoint him. I pressed my hand to my chest, and after a little, it did seem that I felt something. A shell, I said. Aha! He shook his finger in the air. A shell like a clam or like a conch? A conch. And what is in that shell? A snail? Nothing, I said. Air. Those are not the same, he said. Nothing is empty void, while air is what fills all else. It is breath and life and spirit, the words we speak. My brother, the philosopher, do you know how many gods are such? Only one other that I had met. The blue sky arched above us, but I was in that old dark hall again, with its manacles and blood. I have a secret, I said. Aetes lifted his brows, amused. He thought it was a joke. I had never known anything he did not. It was before you were born, I said. Aetes did not look at me while I told him about Prometheus. His mind worked best, he always said, without distractions. His eyes were fixed on the horizon. They were sharp as the eagle he was named for and could pry into all the cracks of things, like water pricking at a leaky hull. When I was finished, he was silent a long time. At last he said, Prometheus was a god of prophecy. He would have known he would be punished and how. Yet he did it anyway. I had not thought of that. How even as Prometheus took up the flame for mankind, he would have known he was walking towards the eagle and that desolate, eternal crag. Well enough, he had answered when I had asked how he would be. Who else knows this? No one. You are sure? His voice had an urgency to it I was not used to. You did not tell anyone. No, I said. Who else is there? Who would have believed me? True, he nodded once. You must tell no one else. You should not talk about it again, even with me. Your lucky father did not find out. You think he would be so angry? Prometheus is his cousin. He snorted. We are all cousins, including the Olympians. You would make father look like a fool who cannot control his offspring. He would throw you to the crows. I felt my stomach clench with dread, and my brother laughed at the look on my face. Exactly, he said. And for what? Prometheus is punished anyway. Let me give you some advice. Next time you're going to defy the gods, do it for a better reason. I'd hate to see my sister turn to cinders for nothing. Pasiphae was contracted in marriage. She had been angling for it a long time, sitting in my father's lap and purring of how she longed to bear a good lord to children. My brother Perseus had been enlisted to help her, lifting goblets to toast her nubility at every meal. Minos, my father said from his feasting couch, a son of Zeus and king of Crete. A mortal, my mother sat up. You said it would be a god. I said he would be an eternal son of Zeus, and so he is. Perseus sneered. Prophecy talk. Does he die or not? A flash in the room, searing as the fire's heart. Enough! Minos will rule all the other mortal souls in the afterlife. His name will go on through the centuries. It is done. My brother dared say no more, nor my mother. Aetes caught my eye, and I heard his words as if he spoke them. See, not a good enough reason. I expected my sister to weep over her demotion, but when I looked, she was smiling. What that meant, I could not say. My mind was following a different thread. A flush had spread over my skin. If Minos were there, so would his family be, his court, his advisors, his vassals and astronomers, his cupbearers, his servants and underservants, all those creatures Prometheus had given his eternity for. Mortals. On the wedding day, my father carried us across the sea in his golden chariot. The feast was to be held on Crete, in Minos's great palace at Knossos. The walls were new plastered and every surface hung with bright flowers. The tapestries glowed with richest saffron. Not only Titans would attend. Minos was the son of Zeus, and all the boot-licking Olympians would also come to pay their homage. The long colonnades filled up quickly with gods in their glory, clattering their adornments, laughing, casting glances to see who else had been invited. The thickest knot was around my father, immortals of every sort pressing in to congratulate him on his brilliant alliance. My uncles were especially pleased. Zeus was unlikely to move against us as long as the marriage held. From her bridal dais, Pasiphae glowed lush as ripe fruit. Her skin was gold and her hair the color of sun on polished bronze. Around her crowded 100 eager nymphs, each more desperate than the last, to tell her how beautiful she looked. I stood back, out of the crush. Titans passed before me. My aunt Selene, my uncle Nereus, trailing seaweed. Mnemosyne, mother of memories, and her 9 light-footed daughters. My eyes skimmed over, searching. I found them at last at the hall's edge, a dim huddle of figures, heads bent together. Prometheus had told me they were each different, but all I could make out was an indistinguished crowd, each with the same dull and sweated skin, the same wrinkled robes. I moved closer. Their hair hung lank, their flesh drooped soft off their bones. I tried to imagine going up to them, touching my hand to that dying skin. The thought sent a shiver through me. I had heard by then the stories whispered among my cousins of what they might do to nymphs they caught alone. The rapes and ravishments, the abuses. I found it hard to believe. They looked weak as mushroom gills. They kept their faces carefully down away from all those divinities. Mortals had their own stories, after all, of what happened to those who mixed with gods. An ill-timed glance, a foot set in an impropitious spot, such things could bring down death and woe upon their families for a dozen generations. It was like a great chain of fear, I thought. Zeus at the top and my father just behind. Then Zeus's siblings and children, then my uncles, and on down through all the ranks of river gods and brine lords and furies and winds and graces until it came to the bottom where we sat, nymphs and mortals both. Each eyeing the other. Aetes' hand closed on my arm. Not much to look at, are they? Come on, I found the Olympians. I followed, my blood beating within me. I had never seen one before, those deities who rule from their celestial thrones. Aetes drew me to a window overlooking a sun-dazzled courtyard, and there they were. Apollo, lord of the lyre and the gleaming bow. His twin, moonlit Artemis, the pitiless huntress. Hephaestus, blacksmith of the gods who had made the chains that held Prometheus still. Brooding Poseidon, whose trident commands the waves. And Demeter, lady of bounty, whose harvests nourish all the world. I stared at them. Gliding sleek in their power, the very air seemed to give way where they walked. "Do you see Athena?" I whispered. I had always liked the stories of her. Grey-eyed warrior, goddess of wisdom, whose mind was swifter than the lightning bolt. But she was not there. Perhaps, Aetes said, she was too proud to rub shoulders with earthbound titans. Perhaps she was too wise to offer compliments as one among a crowd. Or perhaps she was there after all, but concealed even from the eyes of other divinities. She was one of the most powerful of the Olympians. She could do such a thing and so observe the currents of power and listen to our secrets. My neck turned to goose flesh at the thought. Do you think she listens to us even now? Don't be foolish. She is here for the great gods. Look, Minos comes. Minos. king of Crete, son of Zeus and a mortal woman. A demigod, his kind were called. Mortal themselves, but blessed by their divine parentage. He towered over his advisers, his hair thick as matted brush, and his chest broad as the deck of a ship. His eyes reminded me of my father's obsidian halls, shining darkly beneath his golden crown. Yet when he placed his hand on my sister's delicate arm, suddenly he looked like a tree in winter, bare and shriveled small. He knew it, I think, and glowered, which made my sister glitter all the more. She would be happy here, I thought, or preeminent, which was the same to her. There, Aeetes said, leaning close to my ear. Look. He was pointing to a mortal, a man I had not noticed before, not quite so huddled as the rest. He was young, his head shaved clean in the Egyptian style, the skin of his face fitted comfortably into its lines. I liked him. His clear eyes were not smoked with wine like everyone else's.
Of course you like him, Aeetes said.
It is Daedalus. He is one of the wonders of the mortal world, a craftsman almost equal to a god. When I am my own king, I will collect such glories around me too. Oh, and when will you be king?
Soon, he said.
Father is giving me a kingdom. I thought he was joking. And may I live there? No, he said. It is mine. You will have to get your own. His arm was through mine, as it ever was. Yet suddenly all was different. His voice swinging free, as if we were two creatures tied to separate cords, instead of to each other. When? I croaked. After this. Father plans to take me straight. He said it as if it were no more than a point of minor interest. I felt like I was turning to stone. I clung to him. How could you not tell me? I began. You cannot leave me. What will I do? You do not know what it was like before. He drew my arms back from his neck. There is no need for such a scene. You knew this would come. I cannot rot all my life underground with nothing of my own. What of me? I wanted to ask. Shall I rot? But he had turned away to speak to one of my uncles, and as soon as the wedded pair was in their bedchamber, he stepped onto my father's chariot. In a whirl of gold, he was gone. Perses left a few days later. No one was surprised. Those halls of my father were empty for him without my sister. He said he was going east, to live among the Persians. Their name is like mine, he said, fatuously. And I hear they raise creatures called demons. I would like to see one. My father frowned. He had taken against Perses ever since he had mocked him over Minos. Why should they have demons more than us? Perses did not bother to answer. He would go through the ways of water. He did not need my father to ferry him. At least I will not have to hear that voice of yours any more, was the last thing he said to me. In a handful of days, all my life had been unwound. I was a child again, waiting while my father drove his chariot, while my mother lounged by Oceanus's riverbanks. I lay in our empty halls, my throat scraping with loneliness. And when I could not bear it any longer, I fled to Aeetes and my old deserted shore. There I found the stones Aeetes' fingers had touched. I walked the sand his feet had turned. Of course he could not stay. He was a divine son of Helios, bright and shining, true-voiced and clever, with hopes of a throne. And I remembered his eyes as I had pleaded with him. I knew him well and could read what was in them when he looked at me. Not a good enough reason. I sat on the rocks and thought of the stories I knew of nymphs who wept until they turned into stones and crying birds, into dumb beasts and slender trees, thoughts barked up for eternity. I could not even do that, it seemed. My life closed me in like granite walls. I should have spoken to those mortals, I thought. I could have begged among them for a husband. I was a daughter of Helios. Surely one of those ragged men would have had me. Anything would be better than this. And that is when I saw the boat. Chapter 4. I knew of ships from paintings. I had heard of them in stories. They were golden and huge as leviathans, their rails carved from ivory and horn. They were towed by grinning dolphins or else crewed by 50 black-haired nereids, faces silver as moonlight. This one had a mast, thin as a sapling. sail hung skewed and fraying, its sides were patched. I remember the jump in my throat when the sailor lifted his face. Burnt it was, and shiny with sun. A mortal. Mankind was spreading across the world. Years had passed since my brother had first found that deserted land for our games. I stood behind a jut of cliff and watched as the man steered, skirting rocks and hauling at the nets. He looked nothing like the well-groomed nobles of Minos's court. His hair was long and black, draggled from wave spray. His clothes were worn and his neck scabbed. Scars showed on his arms where fish scales had cut him. He did not move with unearthly grace, but strongly, cleanly, like a well-built hull in the waves. I could hear my pulse loud in my ears. I thought again of those stories of nymphs ravished and abused by mortals. But this man's face was soft with youth, and the hands that drew up his catch looked only swift, not cruel. Anyway, in the sky above me was my father, called the watchman. If I was in danger, he would come. He was close to the shore by then, peering down into the water, tracking some fish I could not see. I took a breath and stepped forward onto the beach. Hail, mortal. He fumbled his nets but did not drop them. Hail, he said. What goddess do I address? His voice was gentle in my ears, sweet as summer winds. Circe, I said. Ah, his face was carefully blank. He told me much later it was because he had not heard of me and feared to give offense. He knelt on the rough boards. Most reverend lady, do I trespass on your waters? No, I said. I have no waters. Is that a boat? Expressions passed across his face, but I could not read them. It is, he said. I would like to sail upon it, I said. He hesitated, then began to steer closer to the shore. But I did not know to wait. I waded out through the waves to him and pulled myself aboard. The deck was hot through my sandals and its motion pleasing, a faint undulation like I rode upon a snake. Proceed, I said. How stiff I was, dressed in my divine dignity that I did not even know I wore. And he was stiffer still. He trembled when my sleeve brushed his. His eyes darted whenever I addressed him. I realized with a shock that I knew such gestures. I had performed them 1,000 times for my father and my grandfather and all those mighty gods who strode through my days. The great chain of fear. Oh, no, I said to him. I'm not like that. I have scarcely any powers at all and cannot hurt you. Be comfortable, as you were. Thank you, kind goddess. But he said it so flinchingly that I had to laugh. It was that laughter, more than my protestation, that seemed to ease him a little. Moment passed into moment, and we began to talk of the things around us. The fish jumping, a bird dipping overhead. I asked him how his nets were made, and he told me, warming to the subject, for he took great care with them. When I told him my father's name, it sent him glancing at the sun and trembling worse than ever. But at day's end no wrath had descended, and he knelt to me and said that I must have blessed his nets, for they were the fullest they had ever been. I looked down at his thick black hair, shining in the sunset light, his strong shoulders bowing low. This is what all those gods in our halls longed for, such worship. I thought perhaps he had not done it right, or more likely I had not. All I wanted was to see his face again. Rise, I told him. Please, I have not blessed your nets. I have no powers to do so. I am born from naiads who govern fresh water only, and even their small gifts I lack. Yet, he said, may I return? Will you be here? For I have never known such a wondrous thing in all my life as you. I had stood beside my father's light. I had held Aietes in my arms, and my bed was heaped with thick-walled blankets woven by immortal hands. But it was not until that moment that I think I had ever been warm. Yes, I told him, I will be here. His name was Glaucus, and he came every day. He brought along bread, which I had never tasted, and cheese, which I had, and olives that I liked to see his teeth bite through. I asked him about his family, and he told me that his father was old and bitter, always storming and worrying about food. And his mother used to make herb simples, but was broken now from too much labor. and his sister had 5 children already and was always sick and angry.
All of them would be turned out of their cottage if they could not give their lord the tribute he levied.
No one had ever confided so in me. I drank down every story like a whirlpool sucks down waves, though I could hardly understand half of what they meant, poverty and toil and human terror. The only thing that was clear was Glaucus's face, his handsome brow and earnest eyes, wet a little from his griefs, but smiling always when he looked at me. I loved to watch him at his daily tasks, which he did with his hands, instead of a blink of power, mending the torn nets, cleaning off the boat's deck, sparking the flint. When he made his fire, he would start painstakingly with small bits of dried moss, placed just so, then the smaller twigs, then larger, building upwards and upwards. This art, too, I did not know. Wood needed no coaxing for my father to kindle it. He saw me watching and rubbed self-consciously at his calloused hands. I know I am ugly to you. No, I thought. My grandfather's halls are filled with shining nymphs and muscled river gods, but I would rather gaze on you than any of them. I shook my head. He sighed. Ugh, it must be wonderful to be a god and never bear a mark. My brother once said it feels like water. He considered. Yes, I can imagine that. As if you are brimming like an overfilled cup. What brother is that? You have not spoken of him before. He is gone to be a king far away. Aetes, he is called. The name felt strange on my tongue after so long. I would have gone with him, but he said no.
He sounds like a fool, Glaucus said.
What do you mean? He lifted his eyes to mine. You are a golden goddess, beautiful and kind. If I had such a sister, I would never let her go. Our arms would brush as he worked at the ship's rail. When we sat, my dress lapped over his feet. His skin was warm and slightly roughened. Sometimes I would drop something so he might pick it up and our hands would meet. That day, he knelt on the beach, kindling a fire to cook his lunch. Was still one of my favorite things to watch, that simple mortal miracle of flint and tinder. His hair hung sweetly into his eyes, and his cheeks glowed with the flame's light. I found myself thinking of my uncle who had given him that gift. I met him once, I said. Glaucus had spitted a fish and was roasting it.
Who?
Prometheus, I said. When Zeus punished him, I brought him nectar. He looked up. Prometheus, he said. Yes, he was not usually so slow. Firebearer. That is a story from 12 generations ago.
More than 12, I said.
Watch out, your fish. The spit had drooped from his hand and the fish was blackening on the coals. He did not rescue it. His eyes were fixed on me. But you are my age. My face had tricked him. It looked as young as his. I laughed. No, I am not. He had been half slouched to one side, knees touching mine. Now he jerked upright, pulling away from me so fast I felt the cold where he had been. It surprised me. Those years are nothing, I said. I made no use of them. You know as much of the world as I do. I reached for his hand. He yanked it away. How can you say that? How old are you? 100? 200? I almost laughed again, but his neck was rigid and his eyes wide. The fish smoked between us in the fire. I had told him so little of my life. What was there to tell? Only the same cruelties, the same sneers at my back. In those days, my mother was in an especial ill humor. My father had begun to prefer his draughts to her, and her venom over it fell to me. She would curl her lip when she saw me. Circe is dull as a rock. Circe has less wit than bare ground. Circe's hair is matted like a dog's. If I have to hear that broken voice of hers once more, of all our children, why must it be she who is left? No one else will have her. If my father heard, he gave no sign, only moved his game counters here and there. In the old days, I would have crept to my room with tear-stained cheeks, but since Glaucus is coming, it was all like bees without a sting. I'm sorry, I said. It was only a stupid joke. I never met him. I only wished to. Never fear, we are the same age. Slowly his posture loosened. He blew out a breath. Ha!
he said. Can you imagine? If you had really been alive then.
He finished his meal. He threw the scraps to the girls, then chased them, wheeling to the sky. He turned back to grin at me, outlined against the silver waves, his shoulders lifting in his tunic. No matter how many fires I watched him make, I never spoke of my uncle again. One day, Glaucus's boat came late. He did not anchor it, only stood upon its deck, his face stiff and grim. There was a bruise on his cheek, storm wave dark. His father had struck him.
Oh, my pulse leapt. You must rest. Sit with me, and I will bring you water.
No, he said, and his voice was sharp as I had ever heard it. Not today, not ever again. Father says I loaf, and all our halls are down. We will starve, and it is my fault.
Yet come sit and let me help, I said.
You cannot do anything, he said. You told me so. You have no powers at all. I watched him sail off. Then wild, I turned and ran to my grandfather's palace. Through its arched passageways, I went to the women's halls with their clatter of shuttles and goblets and the jangle of bracelets on wrists. Past the naiads, past the visiting nereids and dryads, to the oaken stool on the dais where my grandmother ruled. Tethys, she was called, great nurse of the world's waters. Born, like her husband, at the dawn of ages, from Mother Earth herself, her robes puddled blue at her feet, and around her neck was wrapped a water serpent like a scarf. Before her was a golden loom that held her weaving. Her face was old, but not withered. Countless daughters and sons had been birthed from her flowing womb, and their descendants were still brought to her for blessing. I myself had knelt to her once. She had touched my forehead with the tips of her soft fingers. Welcome, child. I knelt again now. I am Circe, Perseus' daughter. You must help me. There is a mortal who needs fish from the sea. I cannot bless him, but you can.
He is noble? She asked.
In nature, I said, poor in possessions, yet rich in spirit and courage and shining like a star. And what does this mortal offer you in exchange?
Offer me?
She shook her head. My dear, they must always offer something, even if it is small, even if only wine poured at your spring, else they will forget to be grateful after.
I do not have a spring, and I do not need any gratitude. Please, I will never see him again if you do not help me.
She looked at me and sighed. She must have heard such pleas 1,000 times. That is one thing gods and mortals share. When we are young, we think ourselves the first to have each feeling in the world. I will grant your wish and fill his nets. Yet in return, let me hear you swear you will not lie with him. You know your father thinks to match you better than with some fish boy.
I swear, I said.
He came skimming across the waves, shouting for me. His words poured over themselves. He had not even had to work the nets, he said. The fish leapt by themselves onto his deck. Big as cows. His father was pacified and the levy paid with credit for next year. He knelt before me, head bowed.
Thank you, goddess.
I drew him up. Do not kneel to me. It was my grandmother's power. No, he took my hands. It was you. You were the one who persuaded her. Circe, miracle, blessing of my life, you have saved me. He pressed his warm cheeks to my hands. His lips brushed my fingers. I wish I were a god, he breathed. Then I could thank you as you deserve. I let his curls fall around my wrist. I wished I were a real goddess so I could give him whales upon a golden plate and he would never let me go. Every day we sat together talking. He was full of dreams, hoping that when he was older he might have his own boat and his own cottage instead of his father's. And I will keep a fire, he said, burning for you always. If you will allow me.
I would rather you keep a chair, I said,
so I may come to speak with you. He flushed, and I did too. I knew so little then. I had never lolled with my cousins, those broad-shouldered gods and lissom nymphs when they talked of love. I had never crept off with a suitor into a private corner. I did not know enough even to say what I wanted. If I touched my hand to his, if I bent down my lips for a kiss, what then? He was watching me. His face was like the sand, showing 100 impressions. Your father, he said, stumbling a little, for speaking of Helios always unnerved him. He will choose a husband for you?
Yes, I said.
What sort of husband?
I thought I would weep. I wanted to press against him and say I wished it could be him, but my oath stood between us. So I made myself speak the truth, that my father sought out princes, or perhaps a king if he were foreign.
He looked down at his hands. Of course, he said, of course. You're very dear to him.
I did not correct him. I went back to my father's halls that night and knelt at his feet and asked him if it was possible to make a mortal a god.
Helios frowned at his drafts in irritation. You know it is not, unless it is in their stars already. Not even I can change the laws of the fates.
I said no more. My thoughts were following upon themselves. If Glaucus remained a mortal, then he would grow old, and if he grew old, he would die. And there would be a day upon that shore when I would come and he would not. Prometheus had told me, yet I had not understood. What a fool I had been, what a stupid fool. In a panic, I ran back to my grandmother.
That man, I said, nearly choking, he will die.
Her stool was oak, draped with softest weavings. The yarn in her fingers was riverstone green. She was winding it on her shuttle.
Oh, granddaughter, she said. Of course he will.
He is mortal, that is their lot.
It is not fair, I said. It cannot be.
Those are two different things, my grandmother said.
All the shining naiads had turned from their talk to listen to us.
I pressed on.
You must help me, I said. Great goddess, will you not take him into your halls and make him eternal?
No god can do so much.
I love him, I said. There must be a way.
She sighed. Do you know how many nymphs before you have hoped the same and been disappointed?
I did not care about those nymphs. They were not Helios's daughter, raised on stories of breaking the world. Is there not some, I do not know the word, some device, some bargain with the fates, some trick, some pharmaca?
It was the word Aeetes had used when he spoke of herbs with wondrous powers sprung from the fallen blood of gods.
The sea snake at my grandmother's neck uncoiled and flicked a black tongue from its arrow mouth. Her voice was low and angry.
You dare speak of that? The sudden change surprised me.
Speak of what?
But she was rising, her full height unfurling before me.
Child, I have done as much for you as may be done, and there is no more. Go from here, and let me never hear you speak of that wickedness again.
My head was churning, my mouth sharp as though I had drunk raw wine. I walked back through the couches, the chairs, past the skirts of whispering, smirking naiads.
She thinks just because she is daughter of the sun, she may uproot the world to please herself. I was too wild to feel any shame. It was true. I would not just uproot the world, but tear it, burn it, do any evil I could to keep Glaucus by my side.
But what stayed most in my mind was the look on my grandmother's face when I had said that word, pharmaca. It was not a look I knew well among the gods,
but I had seen Glaucus when he spoke of the levy and empty nets and his father. I had begun to know what fear was.
What could make a god afraid?
I knew that answer too. A power greater than their own. I had learned something from my mother after all. I bound my hair in ringlets and put on my best dress, my brightest sandals. I went to my father's feast, where all my uncles gathered, reclining on their purple couches. I poured their wine and smiled into their eyes and wreathed my arms around their necks. Uncle Proteus, I said. He was the one with seal meat in his teeth. You are brave and led valiantly in the war. Will you not tell me about its battles, where they were fought? Uncle Nereus, what about you? You were lord of the sea before Olympian Poseidon robbed you. I long to hear the great deeds of our kind. Tell me where the blood fell thickest.
I drew those stories from them.
I learned the names of those many places that had been sown with God's blood, and where those places were. And at last I heard of one not far from Glaucus's shore.
Chapter 5. Come, I said. It was midday and hot, the earth crumbling beneath our feet.
It is very close, a perfect sleeping spot to ease your weary bones.
He followed sullenly. He was always ill-tempered when the sun was high.
I do not like to be so far from my boat.
Your boat will be safe, I promise it. Look,
we are here. Are not these flowers worth the walk? They are beautiful, palest yellow and shaped like bells.
I coaxed him down among the crowding blossoms. I had brought water and a basket of food. I was aware of my father's eye above us.
A picnic,
I meant it to appear, if he should glance our way. I could not be sure what my grandmother might have said to him. I served Glaucus and watched while he ate. What would he look like as a god, I wondered. A little distance away grew a forest, its shade thick enough to hide us from my father's eyes. When he was changed, I would pull him there and show him that my oath did not hold us anymore. I set a cushion on the ground.
Lie back, I said. Sleep. Won't it be nice to sleep?
I have a headache, he complained, and the sun is in my eyes. I brushed back his hair and moved so I blocked the sun. He sighed then. He was always tired, and in a moment his eyes were dragging closed. I stirred the flowers so they lay against him. Now, I thought, now. He slept on, as I had seen him sleep 100 times. In my fantasies of this moment, the flowers had changed him at a touch. Their immortal blood leapt into his veins, and he rose up a god, took my hands and said, "Now I may thank you as you deserve." I stirred the flowers again. I plucked some and dropped them on his chest. I blew up my breath so the scent and pollen would drift over him. "Change," I whispered. "He must be a god. Change."
He slept. The flowers hung lank around us,
wan and fragile as moth wings. A line of acid was tracing through my stomach. Maybe I had not found the right ones, I told myself. I should have come to scout ahead, but I had been too eager. I rose and walked the hillside, searching for some crimson clutch of blooms, vivid, leaking, obvious power. But all I found were common blossoms that any hill might have. I crumpled beside Glaucus and wept. The tears of those naiad blood can flow for eternity, and I thought it might take an eternity to speak all my grief. I had failed. Aetes had been wrong. There were no herbs of power, and Glaucus would be lost to me forever, his sweet, perishing beauty withered into earth. Overhead, my father slipped along his track. Those soft, foolish flowers bobbed around us on their stems. I hated them. I seized a handful and ripped it up by the roots. I tore the petals. I broke the stem to pieces. The damp shreds stuck to my hands and the sap bled across my skin. The scent rose raw and wild, ascetic as old wine. I tore up another handful, my hands sticky and hot. In my ears was a dark humming like a hive. It is hard to describe what happened next. A knowledge woke in the depths of my blood. It whispered that the strength of those flowers lay in their sap, which could transform any creature to its truest self. I did not stop to question. The sun had passed the horizon by then. Glaucus's lips had fallen open as he dreamed, and I lifted a handful of flowers over him, squeezing. The sap leaked, gathered. Drop by milky drop, I let it fall into his mouth. A stray bead landed on his lips, and I slid it onto his tongue with my finger. He coughed. "Your truest self," I told him. "Let it be." I crouched, another handful ready. I would squeeze the whole field into him if I had to. But even as I thought that, a shadow moved across his skin. It darkened as I watched. Past brown it went, past purple, spreading like a bruise until his whole body was deepest sea blue. His hands were swelling, his legs, his shoulders. Hairs began to push out from his chin, long and copper green. Where his tunic gaped, I could see blisters forming on his chest. I stared. They were barnacles. "Glaucus," I whispered. His arm was strange beneath my fingers, hard and thick and slightly cool. I shook it. "Wake up." His eyes opened. For the passing of one breath, he did not move. Then he leapt to his feet, towering like a storm surge, the sea god he had always been. "Circe," he cried, "I am changed."
There was no time to go to the forest. No time to draw him to me on the moss. He was wild with his new strength, snorting like a bull in spring air. Look, he said, holding out his hand. No scabs, no scars. And I am not tired. For the first time in all my life, I am not tired. I could swim the whole ocean. I want to see myself. How do I look? Like a god, I said. He seized me by the arms and spun me, white teeth shining in his blue face. Then he stopped, a new thought dawning. I can go with you now. I can go to the gods' halls. Will you take me? I could not tell him no. I brought him to my grandmother. My hands trembled a little, but the lies were ready on my lips. He had fallen asleep in a meadow and woken like this. Perhaps my wish to turn him immortal was a kind of prophecy. It is not unknown in my father's children. She scarcely listened. She suspected nothing. No one had ever suspected me. Brother, she cried, embracing him. Newest brother! This is an act of the fates. You are welcome here until you find a palace of your own. There was no more walking on the shore. Every day I spent in those halls with Glaukos the god. We sat upon the banks of my grandfather's twilight river, and I introduced him to all my aunts and uncles and cousins, reeling off nymph after nymph, though before that moment I would have said I did not know their names. For their part, they crowded him, clamoring for the story of his miraculous transformation. He spun the tale well, his ill humor, the drowsiness that fell on him like a boulder, and then the power lifting him like cresting waves granted by the fates themselves. He would bare his blue chest before them, strapped with god muscles, and offer his hands smooth as surf-rolled shells. See how I am grown into myself. I loved his face in those moments, glowing with power and joy. My chest swelled with his. I longed to tell him that it was I who had given him such a gift. But I saw how it pleased him to believe his godhead wholly his own, and I did not want to take that from him. I still dreamed of lying with him in those dark woods, but I had begun to think beyond that, to say to myself new words. Marriage. Husband. Come, I told him. You must meet my father and grandfather. I chose his clothes myself, in colors that showed his skin to greatest advantage. I warned him of the courtesies that were expected and kept to the back, watching while he offered them. He did well, and they praised him. They took him to Nereus, old Titan god of the sea, who in turn introduced him to Poseidon, his new lord. Together they helped him shape his underwater palace, set with gold and wave-rack treasures. I went there every day. The brine stung my skin, and he was often too busy with admiring guests to give me more than the briefest smile, but I did not mind. We had time now. All the time we would ever need. It was a pleasure to sit at those silver tables, watching the nymphs and gods tumble over themselves for his attention. Once they would have sneered at him, called him fish gutter. Now they begged him for tales of his mortality. The stories grew in the telling, his mother bent back like a hag, his father beating him every day. They gasped and pressed a hand to their hearts. It is well, he said. I sent a wave to smash my father's boat, and the shock killed him. My mother I blessed. She has a new husband and a slave to help her with the washing. She has built me an altar, and already it smokes. My village hopes I will bring them a good tide. And will you? The nymph who spoke clutched her hands beneath her chin. She had been one of my sister and Perseus's dearest companions, her round face lacquered with malice. But now, speaking to Glaukos, even she was transformed, open, ripe as a pear. We will see, he said, what they offer me. Sometimes when he was very pleased, his feet turned to a flipping tail, and now it was. I watched it sweep along the marble floor, shining palest grey, its overlapping scales faintly iridescent. Is your father truly dead? I said, when they were gone. Of course, he deserved it for his blasphemy. He was polishing a new trident, a gift from Poseidon himself. During the days, he lounged on couches, drinking from goblets large as his head. He laughed like my uncles did, open-mouthed and roaring. He was not just some scraggled lord of crabs.
But one of the greatest sea gods, who might call whales to his beck if he wanted, rescue ships from reefs and shoals, lift rafts of sailors from the drowning waves. That round-faced nymph, he said, the beautiful one, what is her name? My mind had drifted. I was imagining how he might ask for my hand. On the beach, I thought, that shore where we had first glimpsed each other. Do you mean Scylla?
Yes.
Scylla, he said. She moves like water, does she not? Silver as a flowing stream. His eyes lifted to hold mine. Circe, I have never been so happy. I smiled back at him. I saw nothing but the boy that I loved shining at last. Every honor lavished on him, every altar built in his name, every admirer who crowded him, these felt like gifts to me. For here was mine. I began to see that nymph Scylla everywhere. Here she was laughing at some jest of Glaucus's. Here she was touching her hand to her throat and shaking out her hair. She was very beautiful, it was true, one of the jewels of our halls. The river gods and nymphs sighed over her, and she liked to raise their hopes with a look and break them with another. When she moved, she clattered faintly from the thousand presents they pressed on her. Bracelets of coral, pearls about her neck and strings. She sat beside me and showed them to me, one by one. Lovely, I said, scarcely looking. Yet there she was again at the next feast, her jewels doubled, trebled, enough to sink a fishing boat. I think now she must have been furious that it took me so long to understand. By then she was holding her pearls, big as apples, up to my face. Are they not the greatest marvel you have ever seen? The truth is, I had begun to wonder if she was in love with me. They are very fine, I said faintly. At last she had to set her teeth and say it straight. Glaucus said he will empty the sea of them if it would please me. We were in Oceanus's hall, the air sickly with incense. I started. Those are from Glaucus. Oh, the joy on her face. All of them are. You mean you have not heard? Oh, I thought you would be the first to know. You're so close. But perhaps you are not the friend that you think you are to him. She waited, watching me. I was aware of other faces too, giddily breathless. Such fights were more precious than gold in our halls. She smiled. Glaucus asked me to marry him. I have not decided yet what I will say. What is your counsel, Circe? Should I take him? Blue skin, flippers and all? The naiads laughed like a thousand plashing fountains. I fled, so she would not see my tears and wear them as another of her trophies. My father was with my river uncle Echeloes and frowned to be interrupted.
What?
I want to marry Glaucus. Will you allow it?
He laughed. Glaucus? He has his pick. I do not think it will be you.
A shock ran through me. I did not stop to brush my hair or change my dress. Every moment felt like a drop of my blood lost. I ran to Glaucus's palace. He was away at some other god's hall, so I waited, trembling amid his overturned goblets, the wine-soaked cushions from his latest feast. He came at last. With one flick of his hand, the mess was gone, and the floors gleamed again.
Circe,
he said, when he saw me. Just that, as if you might say, foot. Do you mean to marry Scylla? I watched the light sweep across his face. Is she not the most perfect creature you have ever seen? Her ankles are so small and delicate, like the sweetest doe in the forest. The river gods are enraged that she favors me. And I hear even Apollo is jealous. I was sorry then that I had not used those tricks of hair and eyes and lips that all our kind have. Glaucus, I said, she is beautiful, yes, but she does not deserve you. She is cruel, and she does not love you as you might be loved. What do you mean? He was frowning at me, as if I were a face he could not quite remember. I tried to think of what my sister would do. I stepped to him, trailed my fingers on his arm. I mean, I know one who will love you better.
Who? He said.
but I could see him start to understand. His hands lifted as though to ward me off. He, who was a towering god.
You have been a sister to me, he said.
I would be more, I said. I would be all. I pressed my lips to his. He pushed me from him. His face was caught, half in anger, half in a sort of fear. He looked almost like his old self. I have loved you since that first day I saw you sailing, I said. Scylla laughs at your fins and your green beard, but I cherished you when there were fish guts on your hands and you wept from your father's cruelty. I helped you when...
No, he slashed his hand through the air. I will not think on those days. Every hour, some new bruise upon me, some new ache. Always weary, always burdened and weak. I sit at councils with your father now. I do not have to beg for every scrap. Nymphs clamour for me, and I may choose the best among them, which is Scylla.
The words struck like stones, but I would not give him up so easily.
I can be best for you, I said. I can please you, I swear it. You will find none more loyal than me. I will do anything.
I do think he loved me a little. For before I could say the thousand humiliating things in my heart, all the proofs of passion I had hoarded, the crawling devotions I would do, I felt his power come around me. And with that same flick he had used upon the cushions, he sent me back to my rooms. I lay on the dirt, weeping. Those flowers had made him his true being, which was blue and finned, and not mine. I thought I would die of such pain, which was not like the sinking numbness Aedes had left behind, but sharp and fierce as a blade through my chest. But of course, I could not die. I would live on, through each scalding moment to the next. This is the grief that makes our kind choose to be stones and trees rather than flesh. Beautiful Scylla. Dainty doe Scylla, Scylla with her viper heart. Why had she done such a thing? It was not love. I had seen the sneer in her eyes when she spoke of his flippers. Perhaps it was because she loved my sister and brother, who scorned me. Perhaps it was because her father was a nothing river, and her mother a shark-faced sea nymph, and she liked the thought of taking something from the daughter of the sun. It did not matter. All I knew was that I hated her. For I was like any dull ass who has ever loved someone who loved another. I thought, if only she were gone, it would change everything. I left my father's halls. It was the time between the sun setting and my pale aunt's rise. There was no one to see me. I gathered those flowers of true being and brought them to the cove where it was said Scylla bathed each day. I broke their stems and emptied the white sap drop by drop into the waters. She would not be able to hide her adder malice anymore. All her ugliness would be revealed. Her eyebrows would thicken, her hair would turn dull, and her nose would grow long and snouted. The halls would echo with her furious screams, and the great gods would come to whip me, but I would welcome them. For every lash upon my skin would be only further proof to Glaucus of my love.